From the Lynn DeGrant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 7th day of March, 2024. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason in Springfield, Illinois, at the state capitol, talking about conservation in an education setting with legislators here at the General Assembly. Coming up, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Matt Bennett. He's at agmarket.net, and then we'll take a look at the weather forecast, too. We'll do that with Mike Tenura, tstorm.net. He's at T-Storm Weather. And along the way, I'm sure we'll turn our attention to conservation in many different forms and how that impacts the state of agriculture in Illinois, right here on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Medium. It is public radio for the farming world. Find us online, listen to us on demand whenever you'd like at WILLAG.org or in your favorite podcast applications.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Matt Bennett from agmarket.net now joins us to discuss his travels. I mean, the marketplace. Like me, he's been awfully busy. Matt, you last week were in Houston at the Commodity Classic, and today you're in a small town in Minnesota called Redwood Falls. That's straight north of Spirit Lake in Iowa and to the west of Mankato. So from Minneapolis to the south and to the west. I guess it's near the place that Walnut Grove, right? The place where the Laura Ingalls stories took place?
Yeah, Little House on the Prairie. So that's my kids actually enjoy that kind of stuff. And we're going to go by there and visit before we go home. But yeah, I've been kind of all over. You know, we drove down as a family to Commodity Classic. We did a meeting for the Total Acre folks as well, Randy Dowdy and David Hula and those guys. And so we were very busy in Houston and then have some family around Houston, visit with them a little bit. And then we made our way up here. It's been a busy week, actually, a couple meetings here and there and doing this one and then done for the week, almost done with meeting season. I got one more busy week, but for the most part, just getting around and talking to folks about what's going on in the marketplace.
Where was the Total Acre meeting?
It was actually in Houston.
Oh,
and so,
okay.
They typically have their meetings somewhere like in Arizona in the winter because they can get out in the field and look at stuff that they want to show growers as far as, what they're trying to do whenever it comes to planting and whatnot. So they try to do field demos. But this year, for a variety of reasons, they decided to have their meeting there in Houston right before Commodity Classic. You know, and they had one heck of a group there. There was around 600 folks the day that I was there to speak, and just a really good group of growers and, really kind of not just trying to chase yield, but of course profit margins, and I'd say very progressive group.
All right. So you've talked to a lot of farmers in the last week and a half and all winter long. What are their biggest concerns? I know it's low prices and probably not having marketed enough old crop, corn in particular. But what are the questions are they asking you? And I'm guessing many are saying, are the weather guys you're talking to telling you there's going to be a drought because they're really looking for something that will salvage both 23 and 24.
Yeah, for sure. You know, and so, of course, we definitely have tried to discuss things like you see a little bit of upward in the market. You know, it's kind of one of those deals where we've tried to help them understand how much corn there is out there. Obviously, basis could work against them on upward moves. Yes, they're wanting to see higher markets. I think one of their biggest concerns is, 23 as a standalone isn't going to look that great. With 21 and 22, it's bearable. But the problem is, when you start back, you start piling two unprofitable years on top of one another, it makes it a big challenge. And so 24, I think, is as big or bigger of a concern for a lot of these folks as 23. Whenever you look at, some of the numbers, I know FarmDocs put out break evens above $5 and $12 for corn and beans. Those were at average cash print prices for central Illinois. But regardless, those are real numbers. Those are numbers that make people think and very concerning to them. So they're trying to figure out, what can we do to prevent further deterioration and potentially still be able to participate if this market moves higher, because there's no question they can't really afford to see prices move much lower, but yet they'd still like to be able to have their cake and eat it too, be able to participate in a rally should it occur.
So what are the things you're telling them that they can implement? I suppose they might start with crop insurance. I know you've talked about this in the past, and whether you lower or raise your crop insurance coverage, leave it the same, how you use SCO, ECO, those sorts of things.
Yeah, and so, you know, essentially, when it gets right down to it, you have to start there. It's a subsidized put option. You know, one thing I'd say, Todd, is that this is a year that's very unique. We were very aggressive as, you know, as ag market. We marketed a lot of grain whenever we were locking in our fertilizer, for instance, and then, of course, we tried to make sure that our crop insurance price was going to be $5 or above. So, you know, when we were trading above 5.25, we marketed a fair amount of grain. Some folks that are in a situation where they're very well hedged at what they would call profitable prices are actually looking at crop insurance as maybe a YP program where they're only going to protect yield. And, you know, our official recommendation was around 70% actually protection. You know, that wasn't all cash sales by any means. It's just being protected based as a board, but those were $5 and north. So some of those folks are talking about yield protection just to save a little bit of cost. Now, I'm not recommending that, but if you had 70 to 80% of your APH protected, it certainly is something to take a very close look at. As far as crop insurance as a whole, though, I think we've got to latch onto as many insured bushels as what we possibly can, because quite frankly, whenever it's a subsidized put option, by way of the government insurance program, it's cheaper to do that than to be able to go out on the open market and, you know, do some of the stuff that me and the guys that you have on the program do.
If you're not covered in the way you've already talked about and hedged out in some form or with the marketplace, the actual marketplace, then probably going to use one of the RP products. And do you do the ECO, SCO? Or have you thought?
Yeah, I think it's something you got to take a look at. You know, I've actually talked to some of the guys there at the U of I. I talked to Gary, Nick, Scott. We were all on a thread the last few days. And I was just telling them where our guys are, what they're thinking about, you know, getting some advice from some of these guys that look so closely at this. And definitely it's of the opinion, I believe, that the guys at the U of I, the FarmDoc guys, you know, that we need to be looking at the buy-up type programs because, again, they're cheaper to implement given the fact that they're subsidized slightly. So, you know, it's just one of those things that a producer has to take a strong look at, you know, how they want to protect themselves, because there's no question, Todd, if you ask, in my opinion, you ask 10 analysts, do you think we could see these corn below $4 this coming fall? You know, I would say at least half of them are going to say they think that's a pretty distinct possibility. And so, you know, I think we got to protect ourselves from further deterioration, especially given the fact that we've seen these markets already fall so much the way it is.
I will point out that if you're interested in what the FarmDoc team has to say, you can go to farmdocdaily.illinois.edu. They've written a couple of articles again this week, and another one was posted, about these decisions for crop insurance, ARC and PLC as well. Remember that SCO is only available, that's the supplemental coverage option, if you are taking PLC on corn or soybeans. ECO is available either way, ARC or PLC, ARC County or PLC. They did discuss the YP products as well, particularly in the webinar that took place on Monday of this week. That's on the FarmDoc YouTube channel. Let me give you the address for it because it's pretty simple to find. You can either go to farmdocdaily.illinois.edu and look in the webinars and then archive section. Might be easiest just to go to youtube.com, the at symbol, FarmDoc. youtube.com, at FarmDoc, and you'll be able to find it there. Now, let's finish up our conversation related to old crop. What might producers think about at this point? We'll also talk about the WASDE report tomorrow as well. But what are you telling them that they should consider with these old crop bushels many have still that they need to market?
Yeah, I mean, as far as old crop goes, one thing you must understand is that with any sustained rally, it's very likely you're going to see a basis widening situation. Now, if you've got bushels in commercial storage, you're paying each month, obviously, to own those. If you have them in your own bin at home, it's costing you money if you've got any money borrowed. So it's costing you around 3 cents a month just to own the bushels. If they're stored commercially, it'd be 7, 8 cents a bushel that it's costing you just to own those. So yeah, I'd be tempted to roll a fair amount of those bushels on East Strength, like we've seen here on Thursday. Roll some of those bushels maybe into, if you want to keep a toe dipped in the water, into some sort of an option strategy. We've got several different ideas there. It all depends on how a producer wants to approach it. But given how cheap calls are, it gives you a chance to own it probably cheaper than what you can commercially. So I would certainly be rolling out of some of those bushels on strength, understanding that if you get 20, 30, 40 cent rally, you're probably not going to get to enjoy all that as far as cash is concerned.
Any thoughts on tomorrow's WASDE?
I think on WASDE report, I don't look for any major changes. It's going to be very interesting to see how the USDA approaches Brazilian production. Some folks think that they'll actually lower Brazil and maybe even tick up Argentine production a little bit. So I don't think they'll make any big changes to the balance sheet. If anything, I could see them tightening up just a little bit on the U.S. balance sheet due to ethanol grind and potentially even tipping a nod to the cap to corn exports, which have stayed pretty strong.
Thank you much.
Oh, absolutely.
That is Matt Bennett. He is with agmarket.net. In today's agricultural news, we'll start with conservation. When it comes to preventing farm runoff, Illinois Senator Dick Durbin told USDA Secretary Tom Vilsack at a recent ag hearing that Illinois just doesn't have such a good record.
We're about number four in the nation in terms of agriculture production, pretty big state. But we rank 37th in the nation when it comes to participation in the major conservation programs, soil conservation programs that might avoid some of this runoff.
So, what to do about that? Here's Secretary Vilsack.
The resources that you all have provided under the Inflation Reduction Act provide some ammunition to begin to address this issue in a more meaningful way. We've expanded the number of cooperative groups that are reaching out to farmers to encourage them to participate in basic conservation that could potentially significantly reduce the need.
Nutrient research and precision ag are also key, and not just for Illinois.
We have resources that have been applied from the CCC that we're utilizing to create alternatives to the fertilizers. So we're going to look at different ways to fertilize the land.
While Vilsack says USDA's climate smart practices that encourage farmers to produce crops sustainably and get a premium for doing so should also help reduce runoff in the Mississippi, Missouri, and Illinois rivers. He says better conservation will improve the productivity and value of farmland, making it a better investment. Let's turn from conservation to energy, but we'll stay with Secretary Vilsack, who yesterday announced $2.3 billion in projects to expand clean power in rural communities. USDA is moving forward on clean energy investments in some 23 states. Secretary Vilsack also announced $2.2 billion in funding awarded to 39 projects to help ensure over 2 million people in rural areas have access to reliable electricity. Vilsack says rural electric cooperatives are the backbone of America's power delivery. Vilsack made the announcement at the National Rural Electric Cooperative Association's Power Exchange annual meeting in San Antonio, Texas. AFBF, or American Farm Bureau Federation, President Zippy Duval responded, saying building new markets for commodities is difficult work, and we are glad USDA is listening to participants and continuing to be nimble in implementing this program. We'll stay with the energy sector and agriculture, where the Clean Fuels Alliance of America has applauded New Mexico Governor Michelle Grisham for signing legislation to create a clean transportation fuel standard for the state of New Mexico. The new law will help drive demand and open new market for biodiesel and renewable diesel while spurring economic opportunity and creating cleaner air for New Mexicans. The New Mexico Clean Transportation Fuel Standard tasks the Environmental Improvement Board with developing regulations to reduce transportation emissions by 20% from 2018 levels by the year 2030. And finally today, a coalition representing farmers and the ethanol industry this week urged the Environmental Protection Agency to reject a recent petition by CVR Energy to alter the Renewable Fuel Standards Credit Trading Program, that's the RFS. CVR Energy's petition is a counterproductive proposal that would undermine the RFS and ultimately lead to higher prices for consumers, according to the group. CVR Energy has long sought to change the RFS and in late December petitioned EPA to prohibit many businesses from possessing and trading renewable identification numbers, or RINs. RINs are the credits that EPA uses to ensure obligated parties satisfy their obligations under the RFS. And that's a quick look at today's agricultural news. Well, as I told you when we started our broadcast today, I'm at the state capitol in Springfield, education and advocacy related to conservation. We'll talk more about that in the future. Evangeline Pianfetti is here. She's with University of Illinois Extension and has a very unique role within Extension and the education system within the College of ACES as well. Thank you for being with me today for just a little bit. Can you tell me about the things that you do and why you're here today?
Sure, and it's my pleasure to be here today. I'm the director of the Illini Science Policy Program, and we're here today because one of our Illini Science Policy scholars is here doing some advocacy for soil and water conservation. And the rest of the Illini Science Policy Scholars are here to support him and to learn a little bit more about state government. Our program places postgraduates in state and legislative offices who are interested in the intersection of public policy and public service. So they have placements in a wide variety of state offices and legislative offices, including the Department of Agriculture and also the Illinois Soil and Water Conservation Districts.
How do other Illini Science Scholars work into the program? Kenia clearly is communications. What kinds of other jobs and positions might they hold as they work towards these intersections of policy?
So our scholars do a wide variety of work. So we have some, for example, that are with the Department of Commerce and Economic Opportunity Office of Broadband. And so they work with the different offices there in the Office of Broadband to look at communities and their broadband needs. So they will go out in the community and look at if their broadband access is what they need and how they can improve the access. So they do that through a lot of the BEAD grants and a lot of the other grants that are available to see how they can improve the connectivity in that area. They also do a lot of with digital equity and digital literacy. We have placements with the Black and Latino caucuses, and so they look at ways in which they can help the representatives and legislators inform what might be part of their agenda. We also work with the Office of the Lieutenant Governor, and that's a big focus on agriculture and looking at pathways to help improve farming and rural community access to food and food security.
And how are these positions secured? I mean, how do they come to the college? What are they involved in that causes them to be part of your programs?
So the state and legislative offices apply to be host agencies, and we look and see if what their projects are match the mission of Illinois Extension and their vision and the critical and strategic objectives of Illinois Extension. And from there, we put out a call for positions within our program, and the postgraduates who have advanced degrees look at whether or not they are interested in those positions, and then they go through an interview process, and we do a matching process similar to maybe like the medical schools do and see what agencies their skills and expertise might make a good fit. I should also add that we have support and funding from UI System, the President's Office, and PepsiCo to support this program.
Are they primarily College of Aces students or others?
UIUC, UIS, and UIC graduates.
Thank you so much. I appreciate you taking the time with me today.
Thank you so much.
Evangeline Pianfetti is the director of the Illini Science Policy Program. We're here at the state capitol in Springfield. Mike Tenora, the president of T-Storm Weather, that's at tstorm.net online, now joins us to discuss what's been happening in the growing regions across the planet. Mike, let's begin in South America. Can you talk a little about what you see in both Argentina and Brazil?
Well, in Argentina, there is a lot of rain coming up. We have two major systems that will move through over the next 5 days, and that will produce some significant rainfall on their later planted corn and soybeans. So the situation in Argentina is going to stay favorable from a weather standpoint through the middle of the month. Southern Brazil will also get in on some of the action, especially in Rio Grande do Sul, which is where about 15% of their soybeans are produced. And that's also where they plant the longest variety of soybeans. And so they're going to be maturing the latest, and they can still benefit from this rain. Once you get further to the north into the heart of Brazil, we're starting to think a little bit about second crop corn. This crop was planted over the last 4 to 6 weeks, is vegetative now. It'll turn more sensitive as we move later into this month, and especially in April. The tricky thing about the scenario is that they average around 1.5 to 1.75 of an inch of rain per week in early March. But by early May, it drops all the way down to 1/4 of an inch. So they basically are getting some nice rains now in a typical year, and then they'll steadily diminish until May when rains shut down for about 3 months. That's when they go into their dry season. So we're starting to see some hints of that with rains not looking quite as good going forward. But it's going to be a while before this would be a concern. And again, with key weather still more than 3 weeks out.
Anything in the United States that we need to think about?
Not a whole lot going on. I mean, there are some storms moving through that are going to produce some big rains across parts of the Corn Belt and into the Mid-South. That'll primarily benefit the soft red winter wheat crop, but it doesn't really mean a whole lot for corn and soybeans quite yet, except that soil moistures will be looking pretty good once we get into the end of the month. In the plains, the story is a little different in that there will be some rains. And any rain in March in Kansas, Nebraska, Oklahoma, and Texas is kind of a bonus because they typically have a fairly dry climate until you get later into March and especially into April. So they'll get some rain here and there over the next 2 weeks. And then we'll start looking for better rains once they get beyond then. Now, those will need to come to fruition as wheat starts to break dormancy. But at this point in time, there's just not a ton to think about until we get a little bit further out into the spring.
Hey, thank you much, Mike.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Todd.
That's Mike Tenora. He is the president of T-Storm Weather. That's at tstorm.net online. Don't forget that tomorrow, the United States Department of Agriculture will release its updated monthly World Agricultural Supply and Demand Estimates at 11 o'clock. We'll put those on our website at willag.org about that time. And you can always go to that website, willag.org, to listen to our programming or to subscribe to our podcast. You have a great afternoon. The Closing Market Report theme music is written, performed, and produced by Logan County, Illinois farmer Tim Gleason. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.